Hey everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on June 6th, 2013. I'm back! Did you miss me, Chris?
I did. Everyone hated last week.
Everyone hated last week.
I got a lot of negative comments. Let this goober do the show again, solo.
So now we know who's carrying the show.
I'm here to make an offensive joke every episode or so that people are like, that was mildly funny, I guess.
So.
And then they're like, oh, hold on. We can get some actual intelligent criticism from the other guy.
So, yeah.
That one's just there to make that funny laugh from fucking cross-managed, and that's about it.
Oh, we haven't even had the opportunity to do that in a while. It was like, that guy not showing up is literally the worst thing about cross-managed, but we'll get to that. Because we've got, even before we get into the recap portion, we got a whole series to talk about. It's Assassination Classroom by Matsui Yusei, the guy who brought us Majin Tate no Kami Neru. And this is something we've been getting quite a few recommendations for because it's a fairly new series, really making a big splash in the shonen scene. Been out for just under a year now. And it's about this tentacled creature, alien monster thing, who is threatening to destroy the world, but he shows up one day in a Japanese classroom and becomes the new teacher of the classroom. And he says, okay, well, look, I'm going to be the teacher for the next year, and I'm always going to be in this classroom during class hours and stuff, teaching these students. And no matter what, you know, if you follow this small set of rules, you know, don't interfere with your lessons and so on and so forth, you can take as many chances to try and kill me as you want. And so he's going to be educating them as their teacher while attempting to avoid their assassination efforts.
It's a very unique premise.
Very unique.
Words don't really do it justice. It's easily...
No, I'm criticizing your use of very unique because I've been called on that personally, so...
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. I guess it doesn't...
It's a unique premise. It is very interesting and unusual.
It is, I think, without a doubt, the most original manga currently running in Jump, just from the premise alone of this idea of a giant octopus who's running a school, and it combines... It's sort of a weird hybrid between Majin Tate no Kami Neru, Rookies, and One Piece. It combines different elements of those series and sort of mushes them together into a series that is good, thankfully, because if it was god-awful, then this would be, like, the manga everyone would just try to forget. Everyone would be like, remember that weird octopus? No! I don't remember that! But if you read Smokey BB, it's amazing!
Yeah, the series would not have lasted long if it were not good. Because it is such an atypical series. It's unusual, and audiences would not be used. It weren't really good from the very beginning, then it would not have stuck around, and of course it has stuck around. Not only that, but it's one of the new, more popular manga running in Jump right now. And, well worth it. Well deserving of that. So, I'm not sure really where to begin with this series. I guess we'll talk about, just what we like about it. I think what I like about it is that it has a very interesting and intriguing tone. It can be surprisingly dark and serious, which is, you know, not all that unusual considering the guy made Neru before, and that was, you know, very dark and just dark.
I was like, once you get to the sick shit, you're like, oh, this dude's fucked up.
Yeah.
He had a baby murder other babies.
By the way, so far, no humans show up in cubes of flesh, so not nearly going so crazy as that one yet. And so, you know, for a series that deals with this, and it's never de-emphasized, threat that the world will end if they don't kill this guy. And these are middle school kids who are being forced into this situation. They're being very quickly forced to become trained killers. And basically... they eventually reach the conclusion that they have to be the ones to kill the guy because, you know, other assassins try and come in to kill the guy and they never succeed. And it seems like Koro-sensei, which is what they eventually name the guy, kind of knows and wants one of these kids to kill him. And knows that only one of them can pull it off. Because he seems to know what it will take in order... what qualities it will take in order to kill him. And
it's
so...
all kind of... oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's all sort of balanced in this combination of acting as a manga that's sort of emphasizing the role of a teacher in a student-teacher relationship, how different teaching methods work, and Kuro-sensei trying to encourage these students. I don't know if it was mentioned yet. These are all sort of like the bottom-ranked students of the school they're in, all considered outcasts, failures, hopeless, futureless kids. So he's the one who's kind of giving them hope. That's why I mentioned rookies before. It's a very similar sort of premise. But even as he's encouraging them, it's all sort of still done in the concept of, I'm teaching you this, and you have to kill me. So you love me because I'm your friendly teacher who teaches you these amazing things and does all these incredible things for you, but you're going to have to kill me, and that still has to be there. And it's not like a weird dichotomy of, like, we like you,
there's,
but we
yeah,
hate
there's
you.
No, there's no feeling of, like, oh, we'll kill you eventually. It's like, we have to kill this guy because he'll blow up the world if we don't. We have to kill this guy. It's like, oh, he's really great, and he's improving our lives. We still have to kill him. Seriously, you guys.
So it's got an interesting sort of working there. It's very Baroque, I guess you could say, in just how all that comes together. And you mentioned before that it's not as dark as Majin Tante no Kami Nero is. And I think if you were someone who read Nero and you were like, this series just is too weird and dark for me, Assassination Classroom has some of those features, but it is definitely toned back a good deal. There is a lot of weird personalities, but I've yet to see anyone as weird as, like, a guy who treats women like furniture or shit like that that was in Nero. There's some weird personalities in this, but they're a bit more sort of drawn back and almost always kind of relate to teaching in some way, which I think works rather well for the series. So if Nero was a little too out there for you, but you could kind of see a little bit of enjoyment from it, I definitely think Assassination Classroom would be a bit more up your alley in that case.
Yeah, and what's cool about it is that it is a high school manga. Well, not high school, middle school, whatever. A school manga, but the school is not just used purely as a setting. There is, you know, this tension between the class and with the other students in the class that they have to deal with. The administrator of the school is constantly putting pressure on them because he's this amazingly evil guy. And we'll get to talking about him, I think, in a little bit. And yet, at the same time, it never just is purely a school series. It strikes this incredible balance between being about, there's this guy we have to kill, and doing all the development and character development to get the students to the level where they have the confidence and also the ability to try and kill him, and also trying to succeed as a class.
And one other sort of strange balance it strikes is I can't decide yet if this is a manga. This manga constantly switches to me between being deeply engaging and being very boring and repetitive.
Really?
There's this weird sort of flow that the manga has where if I read it in any sort of weekly basis, I just instantly get turned off by it. When there's a huge chunk of it to read in a row, it's fine. But I feel it's very similar to Nero in that this manga really hasn't shown its full potential yet, and I'm really kind of waiting to the point where there's a long, large arc for us to kind of get into, because right now, it's a lot of very small short stories, generally done in 1 to 2, occasionally 3 chapters or so, and then it's done, and we're moving on to the next story. And that stuff's good, but because this is ultimately a gag manga that has...
I would disagree.
Drama, it's a gag manga. No, there's elements of drama to it. All right, fair enough. No, well, I find it more
it's a
gag
it's a
manga.
It's a comedy manga, sure.
Oh, yeah, comedy manga. I mean, it's not solely just set up for gags, but it's a humor-based manga.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you're someone who doesn't love that sort of stuff, I mean, it can be somewhat easy to kind of fall into a loop where you're just like, eh. I've seen these jokes before. I can kind of skip this.
Yeah, I think that it is best read at least when you have one of the short story chunks complete, because those work incredibly well if you read them all in one go. So, yeah, you're right. It is definitely like early Narrow in that way, because, you know, early Narrow had, you know, those little mysteries that would take several chapters to play out, and it was much better to experience them in one reading than it was to kind of stop in the middle and then stop again and so on and so forth. And then, you're right, there hasn't been a really long story yet. So maybe if it gets to that point, maybe it'll be more interesting to read chapter to chapter.
Yeah.
So you want to talk, I guess we could talk a little bit about some of the characters.
I mean, there's basically two.
Well,
three. I guess you can count the instructor as well.
The thing is that it's still at a point where it's developing the characters. Because for one thing, Koro-sensei is both the protagonist and the antagonist. It's weird. I imagine that eventually the manga will reach a point where he more becomes entirely one instead of the other. And I'm not going to bother predicting which one it is, because I do have some theories, but I think it's useless to guess at this point. But right now, he's a very nebulous figure, because there's not a lot that is known about him, how he came to be, why he's doing the things that he's doing, as opposed to the reason he's giving them. So it's hard to tell if he's going to actually be the protagonist or antagonist. I'm leaning towards him being eventually a good guy, but I do definitely believe that there's the possibility where it's like, yeah, we killed him, because that had to be done.
The manga just ends.
Well, like, you know, in 100 chapters.
Like, God damn it.
I mean, like, in 100 chapters.
100 chapters? That's not that long. I mean, shit. Naruto's...
100 more chapters.
I know, but shit, Naruto's been running for, like, 500 chapters.
Well, Naruto lasted only, like, 4 years.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, shit, I'm sure this dude's like, look, I'm fucking top five every week. I'm going to keep this great.
All right, time to pad this shit out.
This is going to be the longest goddamn summer you've ever seen.
Yeah, by the way, we're like 40 chapters in. We're given 1 year in order to pull this off. They've got 8 months left now.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
That's the one concern I have as I read the manga. I'm just like, I always feel it's a bad idea to put yourself on a limit, because then when your manga, like, if it becomes successful, you kind of have to just start pulling things out of your ass to explain how there's, like, more time left. It was like how Zatch Bell had 100 Momotos, or demons, or whatever it was in the actual version.
It's like, we have to and kill then, all of them, and it's like, no, we don't.
Well, once they did that, they're like, well, shit, now what we do? Let's just add some ones that weren't counted in the original numbers.
Yeah. So, let's see. So, Koro-sensei is... Go away, you damn dog.
I thought that was some, like, a derogatory
comment. No, it is a dog, and it is wandering around. Go away. Get up.
But you're, like, really negative on Koro-sensei. I was like, wow, I didn't see this coming.
He's a dog, yeah. God, I can't concentrate now. Go away. He's weird, which probably goes without saying, considering he is a constantly smiling squid thing that wears graduation robes. It's kind of hard getting a handle on him, which I know is intentional, but it is weird because sometimes I find him to be annoying, sometimes I find him to just his wacky behavior to just kind of falls flat on me, and sometimes he is actually funny. And I think that is why he's rarely the perspective character. That's why there is Nagisa, you know, the kid who most of the story is told from his perspective, to have that kind of grounded point of view and constantly have, you know, someone for Koro-sensei to bounce off of. So you can observe his wackiness rather than be in his shoes being wacky.
Yeah. Sort of an easy comparison I'd make is he's very similar to Naruto in that they're both ridiculously overpowered and broken, but the big difference I would find is I found Coral Sensei to be a lot more entertaining and likable. Nero was just kind of always an asshole. And it's kind of good because Coral Sensei can balance being the superior being and then being the butt of a joke, which never really happened with Nero. Nero was always
the
superior force.
That is true. That is an interesting thing. And that's really, I think, where a lot of the humor involving him comes from, is the fact that he literally demonstrates his power in the first chapter by, well, blowing up, like, what, a third of the moon or something like that. And he says, I'm going to blow up the Earth if, you know, all this stuff doesn't happen. Yeah. And he can, like, they constantly make reference to the fact that he can fly at Mach 20. He can regenerate if he's injured. Traditional weapons don't hurt him, only this very special, like, rubber material. He's got all these defense mechanisms and stuff. So it's very, very difficult to harm him at all, let alone enough to affect him. And yet, at the same time, he'll find himself in scenarios where somehow he ends up tied up, suspended from a tree like a pinata, with all of his students waving their knives at him. And he's going,
yeah.
Ah!
He's able to be made fun of and be not looked down upon, but brought to a level where you can kind of not feel that he's always superior. He's the butt of a joke, which is nice in comparison with Nero. And the other thing that works well for him that Nero didn't have is that Nero was always constantly put up against opponents that you knew couldn't touch him. You knew that these people were vastly inferior to him, so you never could buy a threat. And you still don't really have that with Koro Sensei. You never really believe a lot of the things he goes up against can actually beat him. But it kind of works because most of the threats in the Assassination Classroom are aimed at the students as opposed to Koro Sensei. So the students are the ones that are generally dealing with these conflicts, and he's sort of just the mentor in the background, just commenting on things and stepping in once they get too far.
There's also the fact that Koro Sensei makes mistakes, and those mistakes actually have consequences, however minor. You see him get injured fairly frequently, and it's usually not enough to really slow him down or anything, but it easily shows that he's not flawless, because he'll make a really dumb mistake and he'll get injured for it. Or he won't be expecting something, which proves that he's not as smart. He's not infinitely smarter than everyone else.
He has flaws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, it's easier to also buy the connection that the classroom starts to have with him, because he's more relatable to the audience, he's more relatable to the characters, and it's easier to buy into that relationship.
He's a lot more likable, too. He actually is very charming. And as I said, there's, you know, real lessons he's giving these kids that are pretty endearing and very helpful. He actually is obviously taking a huge interest in these kids from the very beginning. It seems that, you know, this is his plan. He wants to help these, you know, sort of forgotten kids out. So, you know, when he's helping them out with baseball or, you know, teaching them how to better shoot a sniper rifle, it's all very charming and endearing in the teacher-student relationship sort of way. The contrast in that old, the comparison between the two mangas for me, though, then comes to the, I guess, main character.
The perspective character, yeah.
Yeah. I hate Nagisa.
I thought he planned up until a point. And I think I know what point you're talking, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Hate is the wrong word. I don't hate him. I'm very indifferent towards him because he doesn't do anything. And as you mentioned, there's a recent sort of mini story that's going on that's sort of put a bit more character into him, or at least hinted at the
it makes him look badass.
Yes. It's given him a bit more focus, but in general, I just found his character to just be so forgettable. Like, it felt like he was the main character only by the fact that he was drawn on the most pages. And compared to Yako and Nero, who had such a fun personality and was such an interesting character, and, you know, a lot of...
Yeah, she would kind of fight back and resist him being an arrogant asshole.
Yeah, Nagisa, I don't think he's bad. It's just there's just nothing to him at all. He's just so flat and forgettable to me. From a character standpoint, even just a design standpoint, he just sort of fades into the background completely for me.
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Because,
yeah, I guess
that's the point. Yeah. I understand But I think that's on purpose. Because he's been a doormat for most of his life, because he's so easy to overlook, eventually he gets touched upon, in my favorite moment in the series so far, that makes him a perfect assassin. Because he's so unassuming and frail to the point he gets mistaken for a girl, and so non-threatening in his facial expressions and so on and so forth, he can hide when he's trying to kill someone. And when he demonstrates this at a certain point in the manga, it's my favorite part because he just looks amazing and it's been built up so well. And so I understand why he doesn't really leave an impact on you. And I understand why you don't like that. And I think that's, you know, you get perfectly valid reasons. I'm just saying it's not a problem with me because I know that it's deliberate and it's done well.
If it's entirely intentional and that's the payoff we're going to get down the line, then it's probably going to be very good. It's just this is still relatively early on in the manga series, so I kind of, you know, I'm judging based off of what we've read, and that's what I felt. But I'm all open to the idea that this is an intentional thing, and that's actually a subtlety of the character that we're going to realize the importance of later on, that I'm all for. It's just, as of right now, I barely notice him, so that's all I can really comment on him.
Then we've got the two other teachers in addition to Koro-sensei, who are actually assassins sent to kill him, and only one of them seems actually good at it.
All right, I'm just going to go off a little bit of a tangent.
Go
here.
Right ahead.
All right. This is not the most sexually fair series you are going to see out there, because in this entire manga, really the only prominent female character in this series goes by the name Bitch Sensei for the entire series.
That gets a little uncomfortable.
And her only skill is in seducing people and talking about sex. I'm just saying, it's a little bit uncomfortable.
Well, I think that the most uncomfortable thing is that she both punishes and rewards students by kissing them. And these are like...
Yeah, senior full kids. Of sexual harassment and... It's not. It's. I mean, I guess they're what? Like,
this is, I guess, just one of those things where it's like it's, I guess, more acceptable to have a teacher portrayed this way in Japan or something.
I really like. Can you imagine the shitstorm that would be raised if the gender was reversed on her and it was this male teacher just like, come up here for kisses, my students. I'll talk to you about sex.
Well, there's a character like that in Azumanga Daioh.
Huh.
Yeah.
I don't want to read that series now.
Played entirely for laughs and, you know, perverted to the point of being pathetic.
I just found it so amusing. I was like, this is the only female character really in this series, and they call her Bitch Sensei.
Well, so far there have been three other female characters. One of them is not actually female because she's a computer program. One of them is incredibly angry about anyone who has big breasts because she's flat-chested and jealous. And then there's the last one who is only getting focused right now.
I guess there was the one nerdy science girl.
Oh, yeah, the chemistry girl. Right.
There you go.
After she gets her focus, it's like she fades into the background really fast. I will say before we move on any further, I do like that at this point in the manga, each of the kids, it's becoming more and more, each of them has their specialty. Each of them has something that they can contribute. And so hopefully that'll pay off because we saw briefly what they could do, but it was a fairly meaningless feud that they had with some of the other students. But each of them, you know, contributed to the mission that they went on and stuff. And I hope that we get to see them do that in, you know, a more consequential manner.
Yes. And before we move on even more, I do want to just mention the other instructor that they have is Karasuma. And he is great. He's probably my favorite character in the series because he, like Koro-sensei, he's sort of the mentor to these kids. But he's not the wacky character. He's sort of like the down-to-earth. He's a human. You know, he's a... former military, he's there to train these kids. He's basically, I think, their PE instructor, yes. But he also works.
He spends their PE sessions teaching them about knife techniques. But
he teaches them to kill. But yeah. But he's a very likable character because he's not going into this as a
American military
as a teacher.
Yeah.
He's going into this with this idea of training these kids, and as he's doing it, he's sort of learning the value of teaching, learning the value of having students, and he's raising these kids. And it's a very interesting and cool relationship to see in the manga. I'm a big fan of the teacher-student relationship. It's being explored pretty cool with this character. I feel like he has a very good story to tell over the course of Assassination Classroom if it continues to go forward. And he's a badass too.
Oh yeah.
So I'm a big fan of his character.
There's one bit where like some like trained assassin comes after him and he just completely bitch slaps the fuck out of him, basically.
Breaks his hand too, doesn't
yeah.
he?
He's like, well, I broke your hand. You can't assassinate me no more. He's like, God damn it.
Fuck.
Oh God. There's a few other students that get a bit of focus. I think that the one that gets the most focus aside from Nagisa is probably Karma.
Yes, I like Karma a lot.
He's fun. Basically, he starts off as kind of this problem student before, you know, he finds his place in the classroom and learns to accept Koro-sensei a little better while still trying to kill him. But he's entertaining because he plays that, you know, mischievous character type. Who knows how to say the right things to get somebody riled up and take them off their guard. He knows how to do things underhandedly way more than all the other students do because he's just got that mean streak to him. And that makes him really entertaining, but it's nice to see him like know his own limits on certain stuff because at the beginning, you know, he was doing things to trick Koro-sensei, like, you know, you're going to try and save me when I jump off this cliff. So when you save me, I'm going to stab you and kill you. And so, of course, has to find a way around it. But after that point, he starts to value things a little differently. He values the safety of his fellow students better. And there's a kind of fun bit where Koro-sensei is carrying him and Nagisa flying really fast over the ocean. And so, and it's like, why aren't you trying to stab me? He's like, because we'll fall in the ocean and die.
There is actually some really good humor in this series. It was just a side character who I imagine will be coming back with a bigger focus early on or later on just because of how much emphasis they put into him. And honestly, right now I can't remember his name, but it's the one assassin who comes in with the guy dressed in all white.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he has this gimmick about strength.
Yeah.
And it's raining outside, and they're like, let me just introduce you to the new student. And he just smashes through a wall, and he sits down, and he's like, I have proven superior to the wall. Victory is mine.
So
it's totally straight.
So it's like he makes this awesome entrance, but then he just says this thing that's so unintentionally goofy.
I fucking loved it.
And they're also like, how did you not get... I think he also says something similar when they ask him how he didn't get was, I am superior to the rain!
Oh, God.
I'm not just remembering that, but that was great, too. I think that about does it in terms of the characters. Oh, well, no, the principal. We gotta talk about the principal, because this guy, not the principal, the administrator. Oh, God, what's his name?
Headmaster?
Yeah. This guy is amazing. Like, okay, so basically, this is the guy who's responsible for all these students being in this classroom, like all the problem students being in one classroom. And he's deliberately set up this way because it's a very prestigious school that he goes to. There it is, Asano. He's the board chairman. Basically, the purpose of the classroom is that all the other students in the school have now this thing that they can aspire to make sure that they remain above. They will try their hardest to make sure that they don't fall into Class E. And he has all these amazing ways of manipulating people. He just has this presence about him that's intimidating. And, like, when Koro-sensei, you know, shows up and whenever they talk, the guy is never like, this guy could destroy the world. He's like, I am the ultimate authority in my goddamn school. And that's it. Like, Koro-sensei is the weaker personality when he's the alien who can blow up the moon. It's so great, and it's so weird to have that situation where the good guy is the one threatening to destroy the world, and the bad guy is just, I maintain order in my school because I will raise good students by having bad ones.
Yeah, I mean, it should be noted, this guy is clearly the villain in all this, too. He's, you know, he's a great teacher, But he teaches through... His teaching methods are a lot more sinister.
Mm-hmm.
And manipulative. So it is interesting in that at least Kuro is like, well, I have to fucking respect the guy as a teacher. But he definitely is the one guy right now you can actually sort of buy in at least a mental way that he's a threat to Kuro-sensei. And he's probably the closest thing we're going to get to at least a major antagonist in the near future.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't try ever to kill Kuro-sensei. Because he doesn't care.
Which seems weird, because I think if they fail, I believe his whole school gets blown
up. Yeah, no,
that
doesn't stop him, though. He's just like, Class C is full of inferiors, and you know, I don't care about their safety or anything like that, just whatever. It's so weird, and I guess it's just that thing where Matsui has this like talent for making these unmistakably evil people to make the more nebulous characters seem good in comparison to.
Yeah.
I guess that's about it for the cast. I've already went over like my favorite bit in the series, not in much detail, but I want you guys to read for yourself if you haven't read that point already, because it's fairly recent, like in the last 10 chapters recent. Do you have like a favorite bit in the series so far?
It might honestly be just when the dude breaks in through the fucking door, the wall.
I am superior to all.
Because it's just done so straight face. Because he's like super intense and focused. It's just very amusing to me. No, I don't think beyond that. I think I have any moment that like jumps to mind as being like absolutely amazing. But this series has a lot of very cool points in it, and I think more than that, I think this is a series with an absurd amount of potential to it.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I can say about this series, because it's tough for me to give it a great recommendation right now, because I admittedly have the problem where I just get bored of this series. I guarantee it, I'm not going to be reading this series a month from now. I'm just not. But, you know, 6 months from now, I might hear that there's a big arc or something going on, and I'll pick it up, and I'll probably enjoy it. This is a series I feel like I have to read in big chunks, because I can't read it week to week. But the potential in this of this cast of characters are slowly getting more fleshed out and are growing and are using their different specialities with one another, and the teacher-student relationships that are quickly growing, and this cast of characters with the intrigue surrounding Kuro-sensei slowly starting to unravel and become available to us. There's an immense amount of potential in this series that I will love to see when it's actually fully implemented and actually told, especially once we get a big arc. It's just right now, it is definitely a series that I think if you're not someone who's going to enjoy this humor on a week-to-week basis, it is a tough series for me to read. And I think it might be the same for a lot of other people.
I think that I will give a shot to continuing to read this week-to-week. I will not be surprised if I fall off on it and only check back on it occasionally, because it's at a point right now where it's in the middle of a story. And I feel as if I'm going to get frustrated waiting for the next week to happen because of the way that it cuts off. So far there is no really long continuous story where, you know, I don't feel bad about waiting to read through it. I can wait, you know, a month in order to read a complete story. Would I wait a complete year to read a complete story? Probably not. I mean, I'll probably read this in chunks.
I think this would be an amazing manga for Shonen Jump to pick up, the American Shonen Jump.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, as much as we both enjoyed Machitande no Gaminero, it was never translated. So, officially, I mean.
Yeah.
So, hopefully this will be, you know, Yusei's breakthrough to American audiences.
Yeah. So there we go, Assassination Classroom.
If you liked Majintai no Gaminero, I'm pretty damn sure you're going to like this one. It's an interesting series. It's very...
It's getting an anime, isn't it?
I don't know. I haven't heard that.
I thought I heard it's getting an anime soon.
Well, it might be.
To the internet!
Go right ahead. I'm not really sure what exactly I would compare it to. You know, like, if you like this, then you'll like this or something like that. But I think you should check it out, because it starts up really quickly, and it's not something that you have to spend a lot of time reading. It's a lot of content without a lot of investment in time reading it. And so, yeah, just check it out. Trust me.
There's no anime.
I kind of, yeah, okay.
I think I was mixed up with Nisekoi. I thought I heard Assassination Classroom was also getting one, yeah. But not yet.
All right, well, if that's it, I think that we'll go into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Yeah, Nisekoi is getting an anime. We don't really talk about Nisekoi at all on Weekly Manga Recap. But if you have a subscription to Shonen Jump, then you will see the advertisement for these anime series, and you will see that none of the girls apparently wear bras. So there you go.
15-year-old schoolgirls not wearing bras is a good way to sell me on something. Teenagers without bras in general. You could sell me on Parks and Recreations a lot more if you told me Aubrey Plaza wasn't going to be wearing a bra through most of it.
Yeah, I mean, I heard about that whole Star Wars filibuster, and I watched the clip, and then I still had no interest in actually watching the full episode or any of Parks and Recreation. I've heard
but
it's
if
good.
Aubrey Plaza wasn't wearing a bra, I'd be all over that shit.
I've heard it's good, but I'm not going to check it out because I don't care. Anyway, there was no One Piece this week. There will be One Piece next week. Oda is fine, and we're going to get back to having One Piece week to week now. So don't fear not. We will be back to our regularly scheduled Rubber Pirates. Meanwhile, in Naruto, number 632, A United Front. Okay, so I wasn't here last week, so you guys are going to get last week's review on top of this one. Fucking Sasuke is welcomed back. I don't get that. Bullshit. Why? Chris, why?
I honestly have to think that it's just Kishimoto was just like, I don't want the payoff I thought I wanted.
Is it seriously he changed his mind? Because if that is, like, it, then I'm not even mad. I was mad when I first read it, but if that is the reason, okay, this is a couple of this right here. If Sasuke remains good, and if the reason why he remains good is because Kishimoto actually changed his mind, then I am disappointed. And I think that that's lame. If he changed it for any other reason, as in he always planned for this to happen, then regardless of his reason, it is a bad one, and it's stupid.
I think what it might be, I'm not so sure how this is sort of working out, because it may just sort of fall into the same idea that he's changed his mind recently, but obviously it's sort of a parallel to the whole Hashirama Madara situation, where Uchiha has come back, he's hated by the village, and now in a different situation, you know, Madara in their scenario left and became the enemy of the village. This is sort of an alternate take on it, where maybe Sasuke isn't reviled and hated by the village, maybe is accepted back into it in this circle of hate, this sort of ninja constant is actually removed, and you know the world can finally be super happy. I feel like it's all related to this Hashirama Madara angle.
Well, I know it's meant to reflect it. I know it's meant to reflect that.
Yeah, but the thing is that that's only something we've really gotten recently. Yeah. I mean, we've known about it for a while, but it's a focus we've only gotten within the past 2 months.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to make a prediction on what's going to happen right now.
Okay.
Sasuke dies to save the village.
Oh.
If this happens, I will be very, very angry. Very angry. But I'm going to predict it right now. Because I want you all to be aware that this was coming. Okay? And the hell that I will unleash, you were warned about. All right? Now, there's a bunch of other things that could happen. I am utterly convinced right now that the right thing to happen is that somehow, some way, the final battle in the series is Sasuke versus Naruto, and it's not some, now we'll settle our rivalry thing. It is for high, meaningful stakes, and one of them dies. That's,
you know, that's not going to happen.
That's the way it should happen.
It should, but we know it's not. I mean, this entire...
That's the way it should happen. Okay.
But they've been building up this idea that Naruto has found the light that can save Sasuke from his darkness.
I don't care.
So I've accepted for a couple years now that Naruto will probably save Sasuke when they do have their conflict. It would be a lot more, it'd be a lot better and more true to what Naruto originally stood for.
If Naruto defeats Sasuke and through that defeat somehow Sasuke is redeemed, that's a slightly different thing. It can't just be a matter of, I was actually finally told the story, and this time I listened, as opposed to all the other times, and now I'm good again. No, seriously, I'm good. Like, if this does not end in him changing his mind again, or actually having deceived them all and setting up some way to backstab everybody, this should not be how Sasuke is redeemed. Like, this can't be it, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, this is, I'm staring at the page right now. Let's do this, Sakura Sasuke. And he's like, yeah. And then the next page is...
Okay, oh, look, Shikamaru, I want to talk, now like, we'll actually go into this review. Okay, so, Ino and Choji are fucking stupid. Because they're like, hey, Team 9, the class of 9 is all back together again. Kohaha 9, first time since the Chunin exams. And Kiba's like, hey, what are you guys doing claiming to be Hokage? I'm going to be Hokage. And in my favorite line of the chapter, Shino says, Kiba, no one's paying you attention right now, and it's pitiful. Quit it.
I fucking love it, dude. He just shits all over everyone who's not part of Team 7. Everyone has a fucking opinion, and Shino's like, just shut the fuck up. None of us fucking matter. You realize how it's the Konoha 9 all of a sudden? That's because we can't do the Konoha 12 because Neji's dead. But we don't want to spoil the moment of Sasuke returning to bring that fact up.
Yeah, that's what didn't make it into this whole thing. Is Rock Lee intent in going, but Neji's dead. You're not for the Konoha 9.
Our fucking friend's dead. They're like, stop ruining this beautiful moment. Sasuke's back.
And then you know, I was like, I heard you keep it. They're like, Inada, he was your cousin!
your cousin died right before you, and Naruto just fucking shut down your declarations of love for the third fucking time. Why do you still have hope?
You know, for a second, I think that the mental shipper that I keep locked up in a portion of my brain just so I can have these insights, I think that one kind of cried out, this is Kishimoto trying to pair off Kiba and Hinata so that we won't be mad about her not ending up with Naruto.
I fucking love it, dude. She's done everything. She's died in his arms. She's brought him back from the brink when he was about to fucking give up everything, and he still fucking blew her off for Sakura.
I like what Emperor Dayan in the chat point out. I don't know. I'm still kind of bitter about Neji putting me in a coma. Fair point.
I just fucking love this shit.
So out of all of them, the only one who says something fairly reasonable is Shikamaru. And I know that you touched on this last week and that Shikamaru is kind of saying something reasonable, but he's not actually raising like genuine objections. And I do like the way that this is worded because he says, if he's willing to help us take down the enemy before us, I won't turn him away, but I still don't accept him. Which is a fair point to make, because, like, okay, look, we're going to need all the help that we can get. If he's actually going to help us, fine. But seriously, you're a dick. That is the most reasonable out of everything that everyone's saying, because Ino's like, Sasuke's back! And Joji's like, yeah, he's back! And, like, God. So anyway.
He's like, did you guys forget when he tried to kill all the Hokages? And all that crazy shit he did?
None of us were there! But it happened. I mean,
remember when he brought together a team of assassins to kill everyone in the village?
Remember when he was working for Tobi, the guy who we're fighting against?
And helped him manage to get several of the fucking tailed beasts?
I don't know if they know that. I think that at some point maybe they mentioned something about Killer Bee.
I mean, fuck, the intel of this manga fucking travels pretty fast. They should know by now, right?
So, yeah, if they were to know all the details about Sasuke's involvement with...
He tried to kill Sakura, like, 3 times!
Yeah, but she was, you know, still hot for him for some reason. Because nobody can stay mad at Sasuke.
Remember when he killed the leader of our village?
Remember when... Well, everyone thought that he was a dick, to be fair.
Yeah, but still, fuck!
Remember when, like, we were bashing on Karin for being so quick to forgive Sasuke? I think that that was harsh of us, because we need to instead have lumped her in with just everybody else.
We need to have everyone...
That was unfairly focused persecution. It's like,
we didn't realize at that point that everyone would be just as stupid as Karin.
We're sorry, Karin, but you're still stupid.
Okay. Yeah. We're not taking that insult away. We're just saying you've now kind of hit the status quo that everyone is stupid.
So, okay. So, anyway. On page 3...
Hold on, I still have more things to mention. I don't get it. They do this whole big focus that it's Team 7, 8, and 9 back together again. But then no one from Team 7 or 8 or 9 do anything else the rest of the chapter.
They're going to do stuff next week.
Okay, hopefully.
Okay, so anyway. So the Ten-Tailed Beast tries to get out of the barrier that all the Hokages have summoned around it, and it launches the bomb, and it explodes against the barrier and does nothing except injure itself, actually. So everyone's like, it scorched himself. So Hashirama then summons a bunch of wood clones and sends them out to the four sides of the barrier. And so he's going to open a hole so that the army can come in and attack the creature while it's still sealed up. So they rush in, and then Hashirama approaches Madara, and he's like, I've kept you waiting. And Madara says, no, you're a doppelganger, so...
I'm falling for this shit. So, you're a fucking log.
So he just kind of sits down and is like, fuck that. Which is probably the only time ever that someone has recognized a clone immediately and just been like, no.
Like, I'm not going to waste all my... You're going to be a fucking rock or some other bullshit. I'm not fucking wasting my time.
So everyone moves in. And at first, Naruto and Sasuke are leading the way, and Sakura has a few flashbacks about how useless she has been for the entire series. And she remembers back during the Chunin exam when she said, I'm going to stop being useless now because they've been trying so hard to protect me, and I vowed to protect them instead. But even despite that, they just kept on moving forward, rushing ahead of me all the time, and so eventually I gave up. I thought that they were uncatchable. But then she remembers being instructed by Tsunade and saying, I'm going to teach you as a medic, but that does not mean that you're not going to fight on the front line because you are my disciple, Akunoichi, inheriting the Prodigal Three's power. Plus, you are the fifth Hokage's disciple, and so the chakra seal thingy that Tsunade has now forms on Sakura's head. And so she says, I've reached full capacity, and she throws punches and she's wrecking shit. And we get a bit of an explanation from Shizune that indicates that she has actually been focusing and amassing chakra over 3 years, and finally it is now active. So she's going to, I guess, have this super awesome technique that Tsunade had now too, because
why not?
Yeah, but of course we can't let a female look competent for long. So immediately she is almost overwhelmed by a giant big mouth thing. And Naruto and Sasuke have to save her. And of course, the manga then acts as if this never happened, because she then says, yeah, I'm catching up with you too, and if you don't, if you don't focus, then I might become Hokage instead. And it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna buy into that.
Okay, Sakura.
This chapter could have been so good. It could have been a, fucking way, way, way overdue, but it could have at least been a chance for Sakura to look really cool. You know, this entire chapter built up on this idea that she's getting stronger. She wants to show her friends that she's no longer the weak link. She wants to let them see a chance for them to gaze at her back and for her to look really cool. And it's done relatively well. Shows her that she has Tsunade's power. We've seen that it's that effective. She has it without, as she even notes, she's like, I don't need to waste any of it on a youthful appearance. It's this big attack that blows the enemy away. And then it's just immediately defeated by the fact that, one, Naruto then treats it like a joke. He's like, "Whoa, I'm never going to talk back to Sakura again." And then Sasuke and Naruto have to save her. You're just like, what was the point? Sakura's the same fucking level she's always been now. She didn't make him stare at her back. She punched something really hard and then had to get saved because, shocker, I guess there was more than one enemy.
Yeah, and the weird thing is the panel layout. Because when we see her doing all this stuff, not nearly as much space is dedicated to it as when she has to be saved.
Yeah.
So
It's like 5 to 6 pages of build-up for Sakura to do this, to have this big reveal of this super strong attack she has. And then just, like, in this, you know, 2-page spread, Naruto and Sasuke rather casually do these super attacks that take out just as many enemies with far less fanfare. And we're supposed to get from that, well, Sakura's really strong. No, I don't get that from it. She just seems at the same level she's always been. She's strong, but ultimately Naruto and Sasuke are much, much stronger.
No, Jilla, she is not Daniel Bryan, because Daniel Bryan wouldn't have had 5 people coming to have to save him.
I really, really wanted to like this chapter, and it just was so absolutely defeated by just this last page.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been able to say that that part of the chapter was good, if not for that moment. I would have still been mad about the whole, it's like, oh, Sasuke's here, yay! But I would have been like, oh yeah, Sakura looks competent and stuff. And then instead it's just like, well, Sakura can punch things hard. That's old. Because we've seen her punch stuff hard before.
Yeah, it's not like this is a new thing. She's punching it really fucking hard. There, like, okay, that's cool.
Like, if you know, we saw, like, the chakra bead, and then there was this, like, huge, you know, spread of her unleashing this massive shockwave, and that was where the chapter ended, okay. You know, she can, like, say, like, you know, she can declare, like, you know, maybe I'll be Hokage after that. Just don't...
That would have been a really cool way to end a chapter. You know, it's always weird to be fantasy arm or fantasy fucking booking with manga, but it would have been really cool. You end the chapter. You know that one scene in Hueco Mundo where Chad reveals the left arm of the devil?
Oh, God, that was so awesome.
A scene like that where she punches something, it's this huge, like, full-page spread blast of the aftermath of this attack and how strong it is. And then the next page just ends with her saying, maybe I'll become Hokage. That would have been a fucking great point that you're trying to make of they're staring at her back, she's on the same level. And
oh, yeah, that's how you do that. You have, like, a final, like, full-page spread where Naruto and Sasuke are in the foreground, and Sakura is in the background with her back to them. You see her back, and you see the speech bubble above her that says, maybe I'll be Hokage.
Yeah. But the more likely scenario is what we see in this panel, where it's Sasuke and Naruto in the foreground, and then you can see Sakura just a little bit in the back, and her back's to us. So there they are staring at her back. She's just really far out there.
And they're saving her while we see her.
Yeah, that's how you get... That's how they're staring at Sakura's back.
So, yeah, there you go, guys. And this concludes the, I think, 20-minute-long segment of why we don't like Naruto is because we feel it could be so much better. So let's move on to Bleach, which I don't have a problem with next week. I don't have a problem with this week, rather, but I know what happens next week, and oh my god, you guys. Oh my god. So,
I'm so looking forward to next week.
Oh my god, you guys.
Nothing more entertaining to me than when Nick has a problem with Bleach.
Oh my god. I have to, like, write, like, a fucking thesis on shit.
You're not gonna write a thesis on it.
I might prepare talking points. I mean, I usually prepare talking points, but usually they're just like, you know, just summarize the chapter and help me remember stuff that happened. This one is just like calling back to events from like hundreds of chapters ago.
You're going to start up like a fucking blog spot detailing the different reasons why this chapter is awful.
540 reasons why Bleach 540 is terrible. Number one, Kubo's art's still terrible. Anyway. So, last chapter was mostly about checking in on all of the various people in Soul Society and how they're preparing for their next battle with the Quincy, with the Vandenreich.
Can I just real quick mention something?
Go ahead.
This is the best chapter name I think I've seen in Bleach for a while.
Obless Progress!
Probless problems. Progress. I fucking... It just... What?
Probless. I don't know!
I guess it relates to what's
is
going
it,
on.
Problems? Prob? What? I don't know.
I assume it's like probe, probeless, and it's a reference to Captain...
Little security camera thingy.
The experiments. I just love probeless progress. I don't know why. It's just... It's so Bleach. So, super chunky from hell.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. So, this opens up with the Khan, the third seed of the 12th Division. He shows up, and they're like, hey, where is Captain Mayuri? And so some unnamed girl with glasses, I guess, Shiho from Naruto, basically, tells him that he's been locked up in his room with Nemu ever since the Quincy attack. And, of course, that was days ago. So Akan looks around and he observes that the surveillance bugs, which are weird-looking things, are inactive, which means one of two things. Either there is an emergency inside the captain's room, or he has disabled the bugs because he's conducting an experiment that he doesn't want anybody to see. Fortunately, for just such an occasion, he managed to plant a bug inside of Mayuri's room, somehow without his knowledge. And so he turns on so that they can see what's happening, and we see that Mayuri and Nemu are huddled around a table, and we hear brief snatches of them talking, and he mentions something about something moving, and Akan's eyes grow wide, and he's like, what the hell is he creating? And then we cut over to Omaeda, specifically his household, where we see characters that I actually have seen before, because I shit you not, these characters showed up in, like, a one-page gag strip that showed up as, like, extra material in some of the volumes.
Really?
Yeah, Omaeda's family showed up before. Like, I think it was Hisagi and Kira showed up to visit him, and they met his family, and everyone looked really, really ugly like Omaeda, except his youngest sister, who is this cute little adorable girl. And they all thought that she was ugly.
They all think she's the hideous one.
Yeah, everyone in the Omaeda family says that they all have the same good looks except for their poor sister, who's ugly.
It's rather amusing.
So, she's kind of bothering Omaeda, who's just kind of sitting and, I guess, being useless. Like, not bettering himself at all. He's just kind of like, mm. So, but he basically, you know, gets them to leave him alone, and then he, you know, looks up in the distance and says, Captain, why didn't you take me with you? And we cut over to Soifun, who is doing one-armed standing push-ups on the peak of a mountain.
Kind of badass.
Kind of badass.
I just want to note, it's like the only complaint I have about this chapter is I just really fucking hate the second son, because he has that weird personality where he says lol and raffle. Mm. It's I hate that fucking gag when people are just like la 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 la, like, ugh.
Because he's a, you know, a dork, see?
He's a super nerd.
Anyway. So then we cut over to Komamura, who last chapter went into some cave somewhere in order to confront the great elder of his clan, because apparently there were other cat people, fox people, guys. Which I never thought of that before, similar to you.
It's the same thing, yeah, like, you're just like, I never... If Bleach had ended and he never explained Komamura, I would not have been upset. I would have been like, yeah, I guess we never really, whatever. I mean, it's fucking heaven, right? It's going to be a dog person.
So Komamura, you know, bows before the owner. He says, I wish to be initiated into the secrets of our clan. And so he laughs and says, why should I bestow upon you our secrets? Because you know no shame. You pose as a human by covering yourself with a hat and armor. How dare you ask me to do this? And Komamura just says, look, you know, the world is at risk, and also the world's been changing. I'm able to walk around like this, and apparently nobody gave a shit the whole time. I don't know why I bothered myself. Apparently I was afraid of nothing. I don't know. So anyway, he says, you know, the world is at risk, we need to defend it. And so the Great Elder says, no, it's not. The world is not in danger. The world will keep on going. Only who bears it will change. We won't change. No matter who is in charge of the world, you know, if the Quincy's take over, and if the Shinigami are wiped out, then we will continue to live in the shadows. And what you're doing, you would disturb our tranquility. And if you're going to try and do that, and he lumbers up and says, I will crush you. So, Komura and giant old guy, unnamed wolf, are going to fight.
It'd be kind of cool. So, Kumamura's going to get to do something. It doesn't involve his big, stupid Bankai.
Yes. And it's kind of interesting how it's like everyone who had like an established Bankai is just like, no, we got to have them do something else.
Like, fuck. All right, they all got to train so they can get new Bankais. Because I realize now I've made all of their Bankais bad. Giant missile. Giant fucking target thing. I really need to change those. New Bankais.
So, yeah. I definitely feel the worst for Hitsugaya. Because, you know, Byakuya could do all that other shit. Soy Funds was just completely contrary to how she fights anyway. Komomura is going to get some, you know, ancient secrets of my people technique, and Hitsugaya's like, I have to learn how to fight with a sword now.
Hitsugaya's like, one, swing, two, swing.
I mean,
everyone else is doing these big epic training sessions. He's like, in a fucking, like, Dairy Queen parking lot. Like,
Why can I not train inside of the dojo with everyone else? God damn it, give me my goddamn DQ.
We're fumigating for bugs. We can go back in a week.
And don't forget my sundae.
Make sure you dip it. I like it dipped.
Oh, man. So, finally, at the end of the chapter, we come back to Ichigo, and he and Nimaya have gone down some huge slide to the bottom of his domain, which is at the foot of a cliff where a massive waterfall is crashing down before them. And so Nimaya says that Bankai cannot be restruck without these waters. And brace yourself, Ichigo, for this is where you will bid farewell to Zangetsu.
Aww.
Dun dun dun. So yeah, stuff happened. Sort of.
It was a fine chapter. I like it. I realize I probably shouldn't, because we've bought into this idea of side characters having a larger focus before with Chad and Orihime. But I'm going to, against better judgment, be a hopeful optimist and say this is a cool chapter, because it seems to indicate that a lot of the side characters that exist are going to be a lot more fun. You know, we're going to have a lot more interest in their characters coming up. I mean, Kumamura I've always loved, but he's always just had such an awful Bankai and has always kind of just gotten his ass whooped that, you know, I like him, but he never really had much of a chance to do anything that gave, you know, let me pump a fist or anything like that. So I'm going to say this is a good chapter, and just leave it at that. I don't want to be negative this week. It seems like you've got a lot of it to get out next week.
Mm. So, Toriko Gourmet 235, Ultimate Impression. So, in this chapter, Toriko prepares to use his newest technique, the ultimate routine, on Star June. But before that, most of the chapter is told through flashbacks to when Toriko was learning how to use the ultimate routine from Ai. I think that's how you pronounce his name. Ai? I don't know. I'm going to say Ai. So, when he was training with Ai, he got this vision of being basically incinerated, and so he dodged away. But after he dodged, he saw that Ai hadn't done anything. So he asks if it was all a hallucination, but Ai assures him that what he saw was real. It's what could have happened, or rather would have happened, if he hadn't dodged. So then there's this weird exchange that honestly it took me a couple of read-throughs to understand completely, where basically Ai says that it's an exchange over whether or not I actually performed the routine. And Ai concludes by saying that Toriko believed his impression, and at that moment his impression became reality. Because Toriko was convinced so strongly that it had happened, it became real. So the essence of the ultimate routine is to create such an impression. In the same way that when you hear somebody's words, you can be swayed by them, swayed by how powerful their personality is. That's how the ultimate routine works. You make an image in your mind and believe so strongly in it that other people around you believe in it, and that causes it to actually happen. So in order to execute the ultimate routine, Toriko must first create an image in his mind, then he has to believe in it so strongly that it happens. He must never doubt that it will happen, and thus, if he believes that he will win, then he will win. And so the chapter finally ends going back to the present, and Toriko sends Star June flying back with a powerful blow, and he says, I know you felt that, Star June. This is some really, like, weird stuff. It's cool.
I didn't think it was cool. I actually, this is the first time in a while I've actually really disliked a Toriko chapter.
Okay.
I just, This is not something I haven't seen before. This is actually very similar to the way illusions worked in Katakio Hitman Reborn. It was just, we make you believe something so much that it becomes reality, even if you think it's not. Like their whole, I'm going to have this girl who's missing organs live because I just imagine, she just believes she has organs. It all kind of goes into a real sort of science of the subtleties of the brain and how you can believe something and have it work, even though it isn't true. You know, he gives the example of taking a sugar pill and believing it's the cure for having ulcers. If your mind believes it's strong enough, the body will react that way. It's just something that I feel isn't going to be handled with the nuance I really would want it to be in a shonen battle manga. Because I feel like what this is ultimately just going to become is just sort of a battle of wills and just, hey, look what I could do to you, and because I believed in it, now you're scared you're going to run away. It feels weird and obtuse.
And also, it has nothing to do with food.
Nothing to do with food. It's just one of those things. Toriko has to strike a very fine balance with me between being over the top and then going too far over the top. You know, Zebra being able to crack the entire kitchen stadium, that was just at the right level. You know, Sunny's hair being able to eat galaxies, that was a little over the top. This is another one that's just gone a little too far over the top for me. It's just, I'm going to make you believe that you are going to be killed solely by having such an impression that it makes you believe that it's going to happen, even if it doesn't happen. And we're both under the same illusion, and people who aren't even really directly involved in the conflict are also going to believe that same illusion. And I don't know, it just feels like it's going to be cumbersome more than it's going to be interesting and cool.
I think that the problem, I guess, is it doesn't fit. It doesn't mesh. Because, like, when they were fighting the four beasts and they defeated it with a giant Pac-Man made of their pure appetite, that was, like, really wacky, but we were fine with it. Because it actually went with the theme of food and eating. This is like, I believe in it, and it's like, okay, but what's that have to do with everything else the series is built on?
Yeah. Like, this doesn't really feel like a very satisfying moment of Toriko triumphing over Stardrun.
Yeah, well, I think that I'm going to wait and sit on this before I make my judgment.
Yeah.
So, let's move on to, oh my god, Chris. Crossmanage is so good.
I love this series, Nick.
It's, look, okay. There was, you know, Chris went over, of course, last week, chapter 34, where they went into this great plan where they managed to get the ball away from Children Academy. That was a good chapter. It was a really good chapter. Not nearly as good as this one. I swear. So, chapter 35, even if it was just luck. So we pick up where we left off with Fujioka getting the ball away from Shonen Academy. Saiga has the ball. And so they prepare to set up the laser pass again. And so Toyoguchi calls for the ball, but then two people are in front of her defending her. And so one of them, I've got her name written down right here because I don't remember anyone on Shouran's team. I've got her name written down, I just have to find it. Yamauchi, there it is. So she says, the long pass isn't a tactic that you used in the league games, which means that you prepared for it for just this game, and it's not an easy technique to master, so that means that the only person who could receive the pass is you. So they're going to defend her and make sure that she can't receive the pass, but then we just cut over to Sakurai briefly, and he's got this very calm expression on his face, and he just says, keep to the plan. So Saiga turns the other way, and she launches the laser pass towards Kato, the glasses girl. And so we get a flashback as everyone's, you know, shocked that she passed in that direction. And they go over, you know, what they're going to do. And it turns out that this was all part of the plan. They knew that Toyoguchi was going to be defended. And so he said, you know, pass to Kato instead. And she's like, I can't receive the pass. He's like, you don't need to catch it. You just have to convince them that you can. And when you're pretending to catch the ball, just deflect it. So she convinces them that she can catch it, but she deflects the ball, and it bounces along the ground towards Ichino. And so Ichino rushes towards the ball, And, of course, Okamura, the panther girl with who sticks her tongue out and stuff, she's, of course, there to bully her and defend against her and stuff. And she says, you know, your body is weak. You can't take advantage of your smaller size to get to the ground. So she's going to scoop the ball up. But then Sakurai calls out to her to pass the ball. And so she dives through the air. She sweeps the ball up. And Toyoguchi's right there to receive the ball. So everyone's like, how did she get there? You know, she was all the way over there. And so Yamauchi realizes that all the way back when Kato deflected the ball, she was already running. So she says, did she foresee this happening? And Sakurai goes, of course she didn't. She's Toyoguchi. She's stupid. She just runs wherever she wants. But then, of course, you know, Toyoguchi now has the ball. And she's saying to herself, watch me, because she wants Sakurai to see her doing well. And everyone's shouting, go, go, score! And she falls down right in front of the goal. Everyone's like, how could this happen? No! She's so clumsy! And then she looks up while she's falling, and she sees an open corner, and she shoots, and she scores, and it's so fucking glorious looking.
It's a big two-page spread. It's full of dynamic movement. It's incredibly well-drawn, very expressive, and it really does convey that sense that this is an epic, high-paced game, and that this is a huge moment.
And then, make it even better, the next two pages after that, nothing. Just nobody saying anything, complete silence, everyone just staring in shock, and I mean everyone. Watanabe the goalie, Toyoguchi herself, Sakurai, everyone in Fujioka, everyone in Shouran, even fucking Namine is just staring in shock because they can't believe that they pulled it off. And so Fujioka has scored, and everyone, of course, celebrates. You know, everyone on Fujioka's team is rushing to hug Toyoguchi. Shouran is still in shock, so they kind of gathered together and they try to figure out what went wrong. And so Yamauchi confronts Watanabe and says, you know, did you let your guard down? She says, I don't think so. I mean, maybe when she tripped, but that's not it. That shot was impossible to stop. And so she kind of laughs it off and says, it was a lucky shot. And she hypothesizes that Toyoguchi was aiming for the other corner, but the ball slipped out. Even so, there was something about the look in Toyoguchi's eyes that kind of has her feeling weird. And then the chapter ends with Toyoguchi rushing to the sideline where Sakurai is, and they're of course both blushing because that's how they are, how they've been around each other for the last 800 chapters or something. But he gives her a big old thumbs up, and so the score is now Shouran up 2-1, but Fujioka has finally got a goal.
Nick, in weekly manga recap, I occasionally whip around a hate dick to criticize manga. It's not often I get to whip out the love dick. I'm going to whip it out, and I'm going to slap it right all over Cross Manage's big beaming face, because god damn it, this series is so good. I think back to when we first started discussing this series, and I was writing it off. I was immediately like, it's not my thing. I don't think it's going to do very well. It's in fucking Shonen Jump Alpha, so I guess we'll talk about it, but that was it. I look back now at what it's become, and I'm just like, this is so good. Why will no one vote for you? World Trigger is higher than you. How? It's so good. This entire arc has just been so good.
It's really fun. It's really entertaining. It's so good. I also have a little pet theory, because there's something interesting about the way that the goal plays out, because Watanabe specifically says that there was something about Toyoguchi's eyes, and there are of course a couple of shots that close in on Toyoguchi's face right before she scores the goal. One of them is just her kind of glaring upward. One of them is it focuses on one of her eyes, and in her eye you see the reflection of the corner of the goal. And she's staring at the side of the goal, which is the opposite to the one that she shot at and scored. So this can be interpreted to mean what Watanabe said, which is just that the ball actually slipped out. But I think that it's more that Watanabe was trying to determine where the ball was going to go based on what she was seeing in Toyoguchi's eyes, where her eyes were focused. Antonio Gucci didn't necessarily shoot there. Because we see her defend the side that she saw Antonio Gucci looking at.
And it's been noted before that Toguchi, sort of one of her biggest strengths, and you know, some even say her only strength, is that she's erratic. It's really hard to predict. She's hard to defend because she's just running everywhere. So this could be a very similar thing in that, you know, you're trying to see where she's going to shoot, but it's impossible to predict where it's going to be because she's so erratic in that, even in shooting.
So that's my theory. It might mean nothing.
I like it. I think it's a very good theory. I feel sort of bittersweet on it because I'm like, God, I want to make theories and fan fiction and all this shit for this series, and I just know it's going to get canceled in a fucking month. Oh.
Oh.
So good.
World Trigger happened, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to talk about it.
How many duck faces were there?
I didn't count.
I like to note, he does have like 3 duck faces right after this dude's like, yeah, that guy you just beat up, neighbors killed his sister.
Yeah,
he's
okay.
Just like, yeah, sure.
This is what I took from this chapter. Apparently, prejudice against the neighbors is a thing. But it's like, okay. When I look at a giant, you know, 50-story tall monster wrecking stuff, and I assign a title to it, even if the title and that same species applies to some other guy, if he's some weird little shrimp who just makes duck faces a lot, I don't think that I get the same reaction to him just because they happen to have the same title. Because it's like, how do you, like, reconcile that as a prejudice? Are you really that aware of the title in spite of the reason behind it? Like, a monster destroyed my home, so can you imagine, like, if someone walked around and they were nicknamed King Kong or something, and the actual King Kong had destroyed your house and killed your family, would you say it's kind of a dick move for you to name yourself King Kong when that thing actually killed people? Or would you go like, oh, King Kongs, I hate all King Kongs, I have to kill that guy because he calls himself King Kong?
What a fucking asshole.
I know it's a little different. I know it is, because you know, what's his face, I don't even care what his name is, actually is a neighbor, technically speaking. But it's so weird because it's like, now this introduction of a prejudice, a type of racism, is being introduced, and I don't think it really makes sense.
I mean, this is the first time we've ever seen a neighbor that's a human,
yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, you get maybe the impression that the border organization maybe knows about this secretly at the higher up level.
But these are guys who are just like, you know, a monster killed my family, I have to kill the monsters.
Yeah, but, you know, the idea we've gotten thus far is that every neighbor has just been sort of a soulless killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's kind of rational to be like, I fucking hate those soulless murder monsters.
And not this guy who's just kind of a dick.
Yeah, but this kid, oh, I fucking hate him just the same, just because he comes from the same fucking place.
I mean, that is a thing. I mean, there is, like...
I mean, that is, you know... definition of racism to a certain extent, hating, you know, a basis of something that isn't actually a content of that thing's character, but
it is, it's such a weird thing to have, like, okay, here's this 4-foot tall kid, I hate him because he has the same title as the 50-foot tall monstrosity.
Yeah,
those don't match up in my head. So yeah, that's it.
The evil dude wants to make Jin capture the Black Trigger because they want...
I don't care.
What's his name's thing. I'm just saying...
That's what happened, I know.
If you needed the recap, they are ordering Jin to go fight... I don't actually know his name. I just call him Duckface Kid.
Yuma?
Alright, there we go, Yuma. I'm going to assume that's right. I'm not even going to bother checking.
Anyway. So yeah, that's a real, like... I think that we need to, like... I at least changed the order.
I was going to say, we really need to fucking...
Because we went from, wow, Naruto is terrible, to Bleach, well, nothing really happened except Unohana is still dead, to Toriko, where we were both like, I'm not sure about this, to Cross-Manage, where we were like, this is so great, to World Trigger was like, I don't give a shit what happens.
We're guaranteeing with the order we do manga that we are going to end every week on a down note, because there's just no, we've never been excited about a chapter of World Trigger.
We are literally only talking about it because we started reading it when it first started running in Shonen Jump Online. Like, we might as well also read, we might as well also read Nisekoi, except for the fact that it didn't actually begin in Shonen Jump Online.
It's almost harder to not read it at this point than it is to read it. It's just it's just there at the back. You just flip through it. Oh, there's Cross-Manage behind it, because it can never be in front of it for some retarded reason. Why don't people like Cross-Manage more? Yeah, I think I propose a move. I think we should throw World Trigger in right after One Piece, because we're almost always on a high after One Piece.
Okay, so we need to go into One Piece and then have the enthusiasm sapped out of us by World Trigger so that we're miserable fucks when we talk about Naruto so we can shit all over it.
Yeah.
Okay, great plan.
I think it's a very fair way to do this.
Okay, we got a new plan, guys. We're still going to talk about the stupid series, but it's going to be like, we're not going to have some awkward thing where it's like, and that's it, I guess.
And that's that. Well, everybody, thanks for watching Weekly Manga Recap.
No, seriously, though, thank you for watching Weekly Manga Recap. Thank you for listening to us on this Thursday edition. We will go back to Wednesday next week. There were extenuating circumstances, but thank you for those of you who joined us for the brief move. You can check us out Wednesdays, usually at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on twitch.tv/RoloT. If there is a change like there was this week, you can follow us at RoloT, at YRoller of Time, to keep up on the changes. Also, be sure to send us your criticism, ask us questions, make suggestions in the comments section, or, you know, give them to us on Twitter, or email them to us, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We'd also like to extend our special thanks to Steve Mann, our title card artist. You can check out his artwork, neuronicfanboy.deviantart.com and idrawboobs.tumblr.com. And next week, Chris, what are we going to be talking about?
Well, we receive a lot of suggestions, and one thing I've noticed is that sometimes we don't receive suggestions for manga per se so much as we do artists. And finding artists or mangaka to get recommended is sort of rare, because it's not often a lot of popular mangaka have multiple works to discuss, and people want us to read something by that particular mangaka. So we're going to go a bit different, and people have recommended before Naoki Urasawa, who I'm a big fan of. So we're going to do an Naoki Urasawa piece, and I debated between a few different ones to go with, but I'm going to go with something a bit unorthodox this time, and we're going to be doing 20th Century Boys.
Okay.
This is a longer series, just so there's no concern that I'm like, well, I've already read it, so Nick, enjoy this 200 chapter plus. I am going to be rereading the entire series, because I'm going into a fully wanting to see how the series holds up. It's actually been about 4 or 5 years since I read 20th Century Boys. I want to see how it is. You know, my tastes have matured. Well, matured, quote-unquote. So I'm curious to see how it's going to hold up. And I'd like to see Naoki Urasawa work discussed here on Weekly Manga Recap.
I'm going
to,
like, build up a few of these, like, series that you have read that I have not. Like, we'll do Fairy Tail eventually some week. And, you know, stuff. You know, a few other hundreds of chapter-long things. And then it'll be like, okay, I'm going to cash in all of these. You got to read Hajime no Ippo.
I was going to say, you're going to fuck me with Hajime no Ippo in like a short week, too.
Good luck with 1,000 chapters in 5 days, asshole.
Real quick, for anyone who's going to be following along with us, or just for reference for Nick, 20th Century Boys does not end with 20th Century Boys. There is a second manga called 21st Century Boys. It's not like a sequel series that came out 5 years later or something like that. It's just the conclusion to the series was under a different title.
Okay.
So when you reach the end of 20th Century Boys, you're like, how the fuck is that an ending? It's not the ending. There's still like two more, three more volumes of the series left. It's just under 21st Century Boy then.
Okay, so that's going to be next week. 20th Century Boys. This will be interesting. Awkward ending?
It's fucking, it's what World Trigger does to us, Nick. It just saps everything away from us. It takes enough enjoyment away from us to rank just fucking higher than fucking Cross-Manage.
Okay, let's handle this the way that Yuma would.
Duckface.
Yeah, are you making it into your microphone right now?
Yeah, it's all tough.
It's very hard to talk like this.
I can't see either, because his eyes are all closed.
Okay.
Where's the stop button, Nick?
Oh no, I can't see it.
quick wings until something happens.